Episode 22, segment one, take four. Welcome to the Game Changer Unlocked, where we spotlight leaders who are redefining performance, leadership, and success at the highest level. I'm your host, Brian Fetzer, and today's guest is operating at the intersection of wealth, influence, and next generation leadership. Chelsea Toler is a rising force in the family office and investment space, and the co-founder of LogicTree, alongside her husband, Chris, a company that is focused on helping organizations make smarter, data-driven decisions around capital, operations, and growth. Chelsea, it is so awesome to have you here. Appreciate you joining us on a remote set, not the normal set, but in Oklahoma City. Instead of asking for a full story about, the whole background, what was kind of a one moment that kind of fundamentally changed how you think about wealth?
I would say this was probably, 2018, 19, right during the pandemic. And we had done something really bold. I was in my 20s. We brought about 500 different family offices, next gens, VCs, some of the UN team to Austin, where I grew up. But there was one pivotal moment that kind of changed everything for me and really, I would say, ignited my intention to help this next generation. So we were witnessing in one of the rooms, I think it was one of the banks, I won't say which one, it doesn't really matter, but they were giving a really great presentation on, things that families should know and the markets. And this 14-year-old, her name is Alessandra Villasenora. She works very closely with Greta on their initiatives. She just raised her hand in the middle of the presentation. And I was like, I kind of want to hear what this 14-year-old has to say. And so she stands up and she says, I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for putting together this presentation. But I was just wondering, for families, what does this matter, how much money or what the dividends are or the returns or the ROI on these investments if we no longer have a planet?
Wow.
And I was floored. The entire room went silent. And then one of my mentors, her name is Lilia Clemente, she's actually still with us. She was the first hire. She's from the Philippines of the Ford Foundation. She was in her 70s or 80s at the time. She got up and she's like my height, right? Runs over with her tiny little self and stands right next to her. And the two of them started this entire dialogue, including the bank, on, okay, how do we redefine what our focus is? How do we listen to the next generation? And that was literally 2 weeks before the entire world shut down.
Wow. That's a great start. it's definitely a very impactful start, probably. Reshapes thought process, reshapes everything. When somebody thinks about wealth or success, that, the people believe, hey, this is the most important part. In your experience, what is there something that's incorrect about how most people think about wealth and success?
Well, even just take that story.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, whether it's, funds and they have fiduciary responsibility, absolutely, right? Or banks or money managers, they're very focused on the monetary. But wealth can mean more than just the money, right? Wealth can be their social capital. Wealth can be, are they wealthy in their generosity, right? And so I think it's just an incomplete definition or often focused to only record on the impact, to look at the numbers. Absolutely, the numbers, we need to be responsible for those.
Sure.
But I think this next generation is actually asking, take it one step farther than just here's the balance sheet. Let's also look at and measure, how does this impact society? How does this impact the environment? How does this impact education? I think it's just a more all-encompassing sort of invitation for all of us to push a little harder.
So what separates people who look successful than actually kind of understand wealth?
So I think especially in the world right now, we're transitioning where Instagram, our phones, right now our phone is even being used as a teleprompter remote, right? Like, they're literally attached to us right all the time. And the biggest thing I would say is just because somebody looks super happy or successful on social media, you know, I would just be mindful also in how you deal with people. They might be going through something really hard. I think we've learned how to project, you know, success and this perfect model of life. But in reality, some of the numbers, you know, from the work that I've done on my PhD tell me 90% of family offices break down within three generations. 1 in 7 of next gens or rising gens will struggle either with addiction or mental health at some point in their life.
I was just going to ask you, why would they break down, you know, in three generations? And you just kind of say addiction, mental health. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that that happens?
Oh, gosh. You know,
and that might be probably a lot longer question than just that. But I guess the why is always, it's always something that kind of fuels. Because if you know the why, you can sometimes get to the answer, but sometimes people still don't want to get the answer, even if they know the why.
I think, you know, Brian, in your work, you do so much with, you know, looking at teams and how to put them together and sports. And I think the biggest difference is somewhere along the way, we have to ensure the families aren't on the same team.
Mm.
So I think one of the things that I see be really instrumental in the families that don't break apart is they start first with their values. One thing I share my family did is, you know, we launched a foundation and agreed, what is our overarching kind of philanthropic mission together? And I think foundations or DAFs or philanthropic giving can be such a great tool to define, hey, how are we still on the same team and making an impact together?
And that actually answers the why. Because exactly. If you know the why of why you're doing what you're doing, then you can see how things would shift to maybe, you know, getting, you know, introduced into the drug abuse or depression, something of that nature. That makes total sense.
Purpose is a huge one too. I would say like the three things I would say that are most instrumental is do they have community and access to expertise? And I know we'll talk about this, but that's part of why my husband and I started Logic Tree. So access to expertise outside their family. Purpose, like, are they engaged in, that could be their community, that could be founding a business, something on their own beyond just what their family has traditionally done that they feel is theirs or their identity or their worth beyond the money. And then, you know, so, you know, access to expertise, purpose, and then community is a huge one.
Well, and now since you just mentioned the word purpose, it kind of leads me, right into that next question I was going to ask you about is Logic Tree. Mm-hmm. What led you and Chris to come up with, was there a frustration or something that led you kind of like, hey, you know what, we need to come up with a company that's going to help?
Yeah. So our founding story, I'm accepting of all different kind of faiths, et cetera. For me, I'm very much a Christian, and I think certain things happen unbeknownst to us, and people are, you know, at the whim of, you know, how do certain things happen in the world that you would never expect. So this was pre-me. Chris got into kind of an argument with his friend that was a mathematician. And they were talking about just, you know, kind of the world and where things are headed, et cetera. And you mentioned that thing on purpose. A few days, I think it was later or before, he sat down with friends and Chris had built tech for NASA, for Pfizer, for Apple. He'd always kind of been at the, just a little bit ahead on how do you use tech, but to make a difference. But they asked him, you know, Chris, what are you working on now? Like, what really matters to you? What do you really care about? Mm. And it was a few days later, he wrote a list. And on that list, one of the main things was logic. This is the crazy, weird destiny part. So I was working within the UN on a few different initiatives. And some of that team, unbeknownst to me, actually on the same day launched World Logic Day. And this was before we met. And this concept was the same, which is as we head into this era of AI, and I think it was, you know, Audrey Azoulay, who was running UNESCO in peace, she was like, we have to find ways to understand each other, to think critically, to protect humans and their access to expertise, but also honoring them as people and their minds, even as AI is going to accelerate, which it obviously has.
Accelerate and accelerate at a rapid pace, without question, without question. That's interesting. So give me, you know, what is Logic Tree, like a definition of the name?
Yeah. So we had talked a little bit. Everyone always says Logic try, which is fine. We now joke and say like, give Logic a try. But it comes from like the concept of the same thing as like chemistry or our goal. And for those that are more on kind of the investment side, like Chris and I wanted to create a new category. Mm-hmm. We felt that honestly, even in the most tough situations and what we're facing in the world, we need people that are protecting critical thinking and critical reasoning. And often the reasoning is left out in AI tools or even in conversations to where people feel more divided than they have to. So that was a bit behind why the name.
That's awesome. Where can somebody find out more about Logic Tree if they wanted to look it up and potentially use it?
Yeah, so I'll answer that. I mean, you can obviously go to our social media pages or logictree.com, but I would say I hope to see that people start to recognize Logic Tree powering the experts in the campaigns that are making a really, really big difference in the world. So for us, I hope it's less about, you know, just our website, et cetera. It more is hopefully that you're going to start to see, I don't even think it's a movement. I think it's a way forward.
Wow. It's exciting to me. I think this is phenomenal stuff. And hey, we're going to be back right after a short commercial break, more with Chelsea Toler on the Game Changer Unlocked. Welcome back to the Game Changer Unlocked. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of the Game Changer Unlocked or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS. Enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. If you prefer to listen on the go, you can catch the podcast version of the show right now on Now Media TV at the website, www.nowmedia.tv. From business to breaking news to lifestyle to culture and really everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. And we're back with Chelsea Toler, and we're diving into influence, access, and how advisory roles and kind of strategic alignment are shaping the future of wealth. Chelsea, you know, we talked about kind of the origin and kind of start, and you work closely with investors, founders, and organizations on, you know, different areas. But how important are advisory boards in today's landscape?
Instrumental. I think one of the things that we often advocate for is specifically for next gens or rising gens, dedicating a next gen advisor. And I'll explain why. So,
okay. So seems odd. Let's backtrack real quick. Because I think when somebody says next gen,
what does it mean?
They might not know what next gen is. They might, the next generation of, you know, like my grandparents would have thought next generation. But when you're talking about in the financial world or the family office space, what is next gen?
Yeah. So different communities define it differently. I would say in the US, we're looking at the greatest wealth transfer in history. And so family office can be defined as a family that has kind of 100 million or more. That could be family business, liquidity, different types of assets. And so it's that generation that's a part of that great wealth transfer that's going to be making those capital decisions even in the next 10 years.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, now let's go back. Advisory board.
Yes.
What, a real advisory board, you know, there's good ones and there might be bad ones. What might separate?
Definitely, I would look at intergenerational. I would also look at your family values, the up and coming next gen's family values when you're really kind of deciphering, okay, who needs to be on that board? And then that next gen advocate that I'm talking about, I'll explain why that's so important. Okay. So a lot of times this up and coming generation, they might want to propose a different nonprofit, or they might want to start their own business, or they might have disagreement about, you know, what the family has done to date, et cetera. When they're put in the position of having to pitch to all of the other advisors that have known the patriarch or the matriarch, the power dynamic is really, really difficult. And that's when we tend to see these family type breakdowns. But if they have an advocate that's an advisor and there's an agreement between the traditional family office board and that next-gen advisor, they can actually help smooth a lot of those conversations or decisions.
I mean, that makes total sense, because if you think about just the way the world is, what might, from an impact standpoint or a global part, might have been very different from one generation or a couple generations to next. I mean, somebody might have been very much so on, you know, farming or sustainability in that area. And AI might be the next one where there's concern of that. So I can completely see how that would shift, but I could also see how that could cause a little maybe rift in families. And
yes,
and not to say that it isn't true, but we're all different. And you could have a couple family members that think one way, and you might have a couple that think completely different.
Yeah. And I think to your question about the makeup of an advisory board, that's something else I would say is, let's say a family decides to go into a new area. Like maybe they were traditionally doctors or medicine or biotech, and they're going to go into something like ad tech, right? Or farming.
Right.
Build your board with experts that, if you're going to put capital into kind of a different direction and maybe your next gens want to try some things, that they can help be their mentor or their guide in that process.
That makes very
logical.
Logical sense. Not you doing a play on words and anything, but it does. When you're looking to develop the advisory board, what are some qualities, or is there any qualities that would be advantageous to have?
I think it's no different, although I'm sure a little bit different, but we were chatting even like when you look at sports teams, right? If you're going to go, I'm going to be very blunt with this, but sometimes family offices are competing. You're competing in different markets. You're competing as, those that have capital for even in philanthropy, you're kind of competing for what's going to get attention or what's going to get support. So you're really building your team, essentially. And I would say, you know, there's different iterations of that. And I would say it's something I'm excited about. I think often we're in a time where people feel very challenged by this great wealth transfer. But I actually think it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for families not to work in silos. Like, let's work with other families. Let's work intergenerationally. Like, let's address global challenges and local challenges together.
Silos is probably the word that I can't stand the most when it comes to businesses, because it's the quickest way to ruin a team, a business, a family, is operating in silos. It's just pet peeve of mine since I started coaching way back when, to always eliminate those things. When you are looking for the right match for people, for the right opportunities, to say, especially in kind of the impact-driven space, how do you kind of go about that?
So I'll give a tangible example. So one advisory board we kind of helped put together. So my background was entrepreneurial, but in the philanthropy space. So I was a part of a 5-woman team. I was in my 20s. Our executive director, I think, was maybe 30, 29,
30. So you're old.
Yes. And at the time, we were given this overarching problem of solve generosity in Austin, right? And we didn't exactly know what that was going to look like. But we ended up launching a tech giving platform very early days. And we raised, this is our kind of claim to fame, we raised $10 million in 24 hours for 750 nonprofits. We did something right.
It's pretty awesome, yeah.
But we got to a point where we were comfortable. And right. And it was kind of like, you know, we've chatted behind the scenes on like, how do you go from good to great? Mm-hmm. Right? How do you go from good to great? And we realized building an advisory board was the best way that we could do that. So we really looked at, okay, what are we doing really well? What's our goal is to be one of the most generous cities in the world. And our goal is to do this giving day. Who are different sectors? So we brought in corporates like Google, but we also brought in grassroots nonprofit leaders. We brought in, different generations, different backgrounds, different ethnicities, right? We really built that advisory board with values alignment, but different sectors or markets that we knew we needed to go into with this new concept.
Okay, so I'm gonna take one of the things you said with the raising part and kind of ask a question on it. how important is the alignment piece, values, vision, timing as well, to connecting the capital to raise money with companies?
I think it's everything. The biggest thing I can say for especially companies right now is we're about to head into some hard economic challenges, right? That just is. And even with, you know, some of the work that my husband and I are seeing across country leaders with AI, there will be a transition, right? And that there's no way around that. But if we sacrifice and operate from a scarcity mindset and start to go against our moral compass or our values, it just won't. I've seen it time and time again. If you stay true to and committed to who you are, the right people and the right solutions and the money will come.
I would agree. Is it when you start bending or compromising, and you see it all the time in, you know, the news constantly, that people, they compromise values or they try to get the get rich quick.
Yep.
Or the scheme. I mean, everybody's trying to, like, you know, gambling, you know, I mean, it's become massively popular, but people lose a lot because they're trying to get it now as opposed to get it when it's the right time.
Yep.
Per se.
And I will say that is something too that I get asked quite a bit, like the differences between venture, family office, et cetera. Where I see the world headed is family offices, especially if they're collaborating, can be great for patient capital. Right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, we don't need maybe our returns in 2 years or 5 years, et cetera, but we really want to go solve longevity, or we really want to go solve diabetes, right? For example, like Patricia's doing an amazing job with the Dream Foundation. So that's where I think family offices are well suited. And I think venture is really well suited to be experts and figure out this innovation space, but they're looking for companies and things that fit a certain box. And sometimes your company doesn't fit that box.
Very true. So let me go back real quick, and because you mentioned ventures and family offices, and I think there's probably some people that would not really know the difference, because it, when I was first learning about it how many years ago, it was a little confusing. So can you kind of give a brief family office versus venture capital?
Yeah. So venture is often kind of those that are really well versed in deploying capital to, you know, really, not all of them, but a lot of times 10 years ish, okay, right? So how do you scale, you know, how do you scale an Icon, which is out of Austin, right? Or how do you scale certain companies very quickly? And they sit kind of at the in-between. So a family office might put money into a fund or LP. They're going to kind of take that capital, put it into venture, expect really rapid growth, like exponentially fast growth. But they build some of the biggest unicorns and companies that we have in the world, right? So they kind of know what they're doing, right?
Sure, absolutely.
And sometimes, like for me, I worked with my dad on this, but I said, hey, can I take some of my capital and put it into venture? And we did that with HL Ventures so I could learn. And I thought that was really, really important. So I would say, you know, there's a lot of controversy right now on if venture will make it. I've learned over the years, don't knock venture. They do some really amazing things.
Right.
But so do family offices. And I think for family offices, they typically are a little bit more values heavy, slower growth, a little heavier on impact. And a lot of the times when Chris and I are working with, you know, whether it's folks on our platform or our community, the pitch for venture and what you kind of need to do in that route is very different than when you're talking to a family. And there I would say even more so, if you're not values aligned, don't take their capital.
It's a very, very good. That's a very good statement without question. Hey, this conversation has been amazing. We're going to be coming back. We're going to talk about decision-making, risks, and operating at a really high level. Right after this commercial break, we're going to be back with Chelsea Toler. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Chelsea Toler. We're going to be talking about decision-making, risks, and what separates high-level operators. we're really going to take some deep dives. At your level, decisions carry real weight, not, you know, fake weight, I should say. What decision-making process actually look like when you're talking about high stakes?
So I would say I'll give a kind of a tangible real world example of something I just sort of experienced. So a lot of times Chris and I are working alongside. So one of our core partners is the Public Foundation, which was started by a former ambassador, but they have a network and we have a partnership of, I think together we serve about 2,000 different family offices and quite a few country leaders. And so when you think about, you know, the decisions that they have to make on a daily basis in an ever-changing world and in an AI era, it's really tough, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
It's really tough right now. And I mentioned earlier, like when I look at family dynamics and what's helped family offices, I was like, what if we apply that same kind of framework, right? So what we did was we went inside of Parliament. So we work with one of the lords there, and we said, you know, hey, we really think bringing people together and having some of this interactive dialogue right now is really, really important. And he said, okay, you know, we're going to somehow do this in 2 weeks. And so we completely moved our World Logic Day from Austin all the way to the UK, which was very wild. But what I saw work really well, and I would say the biggest advice I could give, is a lot of times those leaders feel like they're completely alone. Mm. And what changed was when they were in the dynamic. So one example was we had a next gen panel, right? And I asked them, I said, what's one decision that you've, you know, really been challenged with right now? And their answers were unbelievable, but it was more so even just that camaraderie of understanding they weren't alone in having to make these extremely high stakes decisions. That changed everything. So the tangible example I'll give is one next gen said, you know, I completely had to change where I was going to live because my family didn't want me to have to go into the military. That was one. Another said, you know, I can't remember. It was something crazy. It was like, I've 30x'd my portfolio because of crypto. My family didn't understand that. And he said, but I feel really unfulfilled and I really want to do something with animals and I have no idea how to do that. Right. But so these problems that they're grappling with can truly change the trajectory of the entire world, but them just not feeling alone. I think that was the biggest thing that I could ever hope to see.
Do you see a lot more families seek help from a standpoint of like therapy or outside advice?
So I wish I could tell you yes. I think that there is a lot of pride in especially successful families. And I think even more so with this up and coming generation, they want nothing more to prove themselves.
Right.
Right. And so sometimes that becomes a blocker to, hey, I'm really struggling right now.
Right.
Right. And the best way I can see combating that is, you know, we actually met because I was doing a panel on the Real Summit.
Right.
And most people don't know, and I won't say that's not the point of what family it was, but there's a very notable family that had a speaker on that panel. That was the first time she's ever been on a panel ever.
Wow.
And it was because she said, you know, I can't wait for other families. I have to say what it means and what the difference was when I got my daughter help.
Well, I think people that have issues, everybody has issues. I definitely have plenty of issues. But I think sometimes the general public or, you know, just social media is so quick to judge that I think people fail to realize the pressures. Mm. And hey, like just because you have money doesn't mean you're absent of pressures. It doesn't mean you're absent of struggles. It's just they're different. And you need help. You need to be able to open up and say, hey, I can't do this on my own. I mean, I know my my business partner, Dr. Wayne Chappelle, says it, you know, all the time. I've heard him say it almost ad nauseum. You can't become the best version of yourself by yourself.
we aren't meant to be alone. No. Like I think that is the whole point, is we're supposed to be able to rely on one another.
Yeah.
And I will say I've learned a lot. I have a mentee and I've watched her journey. She's, I think she just turned 15 a few days ago. So happy birthday, Zoya. But for her, you know, she started out and she was doing a TED talk on reimagining education, and she had been bullied really badly. And Brian, overnight, I think she now has like 120,000 followers, something crazy. Right.
Wow.
And she's got 2,000 kids from around the world that have reached out and said, I agree. And we have to change this. Right. 14, 15, 12. One of her, I think the treasurer of the organization is 12. Right. From and I'm just, so awesome. It's awesome. Right. But I think sometimes we, even as adults, need to learn from this generation that they've realized we can't do these things. We can't do life alone, and we're not meant to.
That is very true. And I'm going to kind of piggyback off that and talk about smart decisions. That, you know, why do you think, and you've kind of answered this already, but I want to ask it in a different way. Why do you think smart people continually make bad decisions in kind of that realm, per se?
So I'm going to give credit to my husband on this. And when we've disagreed back and forth, but I actually think his argument has some points. People are emotional beings. Mm. A lot of times we're making our decisions by emotions. I've watched this. So my first angel investment room, I was 12. My parents were part of something in Austin called CTAN that they spun out SWAN, which was like an impact-focused angel group. But my parents had an office building at the time and they needed space. So they opened up their conference room or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I still remember that. And I would sit in the back and I would watch the pitches. I remember even at 12 realizing, sure, I mean, the documentation and their numbers were there and they went through them. But how they decided who got the capital or not was really, did they like the person? Did they emotionally connect with the person? Was the story right there? And I think it's no more complicated than really smart people. We just have to realize the balance. So I think we need the frameworks and the critical thinking and the logic to make sure we're making sound decisions. Mm. And I think it's being, when your heart and your head are connected, that's when you're going to make the best sound decisions that you can.
It's kind of taking the data along with the basic instincts and kind of shaping that decision then, yeah.
Yeah, we are not going to ever overcome the fact that we have emotions, nor should we, right? And that just is what it is. But I think sometimes our discernment needs to lean a little bit more critical thinking and logic, mainly just because of even the world that we're seeing. And what I mean by that is trust. You know, is this thing on my Instagram real, or did that actually not happen? Is there fake content, or is this actual, right? And so I think we're being flipped a little bit to really make sure that discernment, critical thinking piece is intact.
When you look at like the noise, you know, is basically to me what you're describing. How do you filter that? I mean, how do you filter the noise from what actually matters, per se?
Oh, wow. I think that's one of the biggest tasks I hope to see is I've talked a little bit in my own social media about what's happening right now, and we're taking bets on people.
Yeah.
And we have to. So, for example, if you see somebody that is just has an outsized potential to make an impact, that you need to put resources behind. That's through the noise. And you know it. It's like when you go to a concert and you see someone where you're just like, that is an unparalleled gift beyond measure. And I think we need to shift sometimes from thinking we can do it all and hold our resources and holding everything to understanding, let's get behind the people that can make the biggest difference the fastest, because we'll go farther together.
It's crazy. When you just said that, I thought of Justin Timberlake. I saw him concert in Charlottesville when we had some craziness happen. And I looked at him like, man, that guy is different. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that I didn't know that as an artist, but when you see somebody, you know, sing and do instruments and dance, you kind of get a different perspective. And I say that to kind of bring it kind of back, that when people are unique, when there is a unicorn, it's kind of easy to know.
Yeah.
And you know, what are you going to do to get behind that person or that thought process that they're trying to push out to help make a difference and make things better?
Yeah. And I would say, don't let kind of the world get away from us. I think we're all human. We have faults. Some of us have greed. Some of us have jealousy. We are not free of sin, right? But I think especially in my day-to-day, I see so much capital going into the innovation and AI side. And I think AI will do amazing things. But my ask of humanity is to remember that people matter, that experts matter, that sometimes if you have a PhD and, you know, like, you know, me, I've spent whatever, 10 years of my life in this next gen space, or like Wayne, who's a trained psychologist, PhD, let's not automatically assume that a AI tool knows better than all people.
Right. That's so true. So true. Well, people crave interaction.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned it several times, like people crave companionship, interaction, you know, being around others. And I think COVID, that time frame in life, really showed that to people, because when something's taken away from you, you appreciate it a lot more than when you just take it for granted.
So. I mean, I think when you just said that and your question was about signal over noise, look at that as a warning. Like, I really believe we have to start to pay attention. When COVID showed us the importance of human connection, and that comes right before this AI wave, and it affected the world, right? That's because we needed a reminder that human connection is important and to not undervalue it.
So true. Hey, we are not done. We've got one more segment left, and you need to go tell somebody to jump on and check this out. We'll be back right after this commercial break. I'm Brian Fetzer. We're here with Chelsea Toler on the Game Changer Unlocked. Welcome back to the Game Changer Unlocked. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of the Game Changer Unlocked and or any of the other Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and in Spanish. You prefer to listen on the go? Not a problem. Catch the podcast version of the show right on Now Media TV's website, www.nowmedia.tv, or on Apple, Roku, really any of the podcast versions, from business to breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and really everything in between. Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. And we're back with Chelsea Toler in this final segment, exploring the future of wealth, innovation, and building at scale, which is going to kind of lead us into the first question. And that's going to be about coming back to logic tree. You know, what decisions or what, you know, what was something that was broken that forced you and Chris to kind of build logic tree?
There's a lot that was broken, Brian. I would say, so here's what I would say, and I told the founding story that kind of predates me, but I didn't really continue how that ended. So I'll start there, which is Chris and I met 2 years later, and he was one of the most curious individuals I have ever met. Like, I sat down with him. The first time I met Chris, he asked me more questions than a typical chief logic officer, right? His Myers-Briggs is even logic.
Okay.
And I just wasn't used to that. I'm used to being the one that asks all the questions. Oh, yeah. And I said, you know, it was so nice to meet you, but I'm going to New York and I have to do this next gen conference thing and see you, bye, essentially, right? I was very much in my, I am on my own. I don't need a man. I don't need a partner. Like, I am fine. You know, I can take on life solo. And turns out that the conference that I was doing, it was called You Belong. It was a really cool concept in the Hamptons where we brought diverse founders from all over. So it was about changing the dynamic of one of the wealthiest towns and having them think about, you know, different types of founders, women founders, et cetera. Anyway, turns out the person I was helping do that was best friends and, you know, connected to one of Chris's best friends. And Chris ended up showing up. So he came to New York and then convinced me to spend 45 days in New York City. My parents, I was, you know, in my PhD program at the time, and they were like, are you going to come home? Like, what, you know, what is happening? And this is, you know, this goes back to, I promise this has a point, but, you know, he was really on this technology, had this just like calling he felt on his life to promote logic and critical thinking at this time, ahead of AI, before ChatGPT had even been released. And I had this, I would say, calling to really help this next generation that was going to make these capital decisions to think differently, and for families to care, you know, and care about the world and maybe open their minds to things they wouldn't expect. But what happened in those 45 days is we started values first. We talked about everything. We talked about our life goals. We talked about what we wanted to see in the world. I will never forget, you know, a lot of times, I get it, people ask startup founders, they're like, you know, what's your exit strategy and all of this? But but for us, Logic Tree was legacy. It was where we came together and how we wanted to put something into the world that was both Chris and myself. So broken, I think our world is in broken, but it's also beautiful. And so whether that's a platform and technology that can serve experts faster or next gen capital allocators that need that expertise, we're putting something that brings both of our worlds together.
A lot of companies say that, you know, they're data driven. You just mentioned data. Where are they still getting things wrong if they're data driven? But
yeah, so we've actually had a few offers for LLMs to train on, because if you think about it, we have a platform where people are putting their decisions, right, and how they're making them and what's leading them and all sorts of different things. We have not chosen to go that path, but what I would say is, if you're so just focused on just the data and just the numbers, sometimes you miss the nuance in the bigger picture, right? And that's why with Logic Tree, we don't just have a content platform. We have a community. So we have a logic circle. We have convenings. We have partners, right? We want to do everything in defense that we can that makes people, yes, AI is going to be an incredible tool, but always remember when they're making those decisions on, hey, could this data help my numbers or my bottom line? But also, what is its impact on people, and how do we make sure people have a path forward?
That's the big asterisk, right? That's the thing that really drives true value and true missions. That, yeah, absolutely. So, as an organization scales and decision making gets a little bit more complex, how do they maintain clarity using even Logic Tree or anything else when it comes to it?
Oh, as things get complex, how do you keep clarity? I think that's why it's so important, and I would put them on both sides. So the first is, what are your frameworks for how you're making these decisions? What questions do you need to be asking? Like, one of the things I get all the time is a NextGen's first meeting with their financial advisor, right? They don't want to look, they have imposter syndrome. Like, where's their framework, right? So they don't feel inadequate or uneducated, right? And then on the other side, look at your values and your mission and your vision. And I think sometimes people undervalue nonprofits in the way that they do that piece really well. So if you look at industries, like nonprofits actually, for the most part, they know what their mission and vision statement is. They know how to tell the story of their work, right? And so I think, you know, I won't get into it too much, but one thing that right now is very like hot topic is blended capital, or like nonprofit and for-profit, public-private partnerships, right? Logic Tree has one with public. So I think where we go wrong is trying to just be data-driven and scale and profit and fast and meet those numbers, or just try and be a pure nonprofit mindset, which is help everyone, give every dollar out, but sustainability is compromised. I believe there's some people and some frameworks and some big players that are looking at how do we take the best of those both worlds and create some new structures.
All right. As you said that, it kind of put something in my mind that trends in impact investing.
Mm.
Where is there is there might be some place that somebody's underestimating in a certain area or overestimating.
Ugh. Impact investing. It's such,
because we're talking about impact and it kind of, you know, just things that you said just kind of led me to think about that impact investing piece, because
absolutely. I mean, look, impact investing got a bad name. I think it is already having a resurgence. We were in the Beacon Forum, which is a really large forum on philanthropy in the UK. And they were throwing around the terminology impact economy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think where, you know, the initial impact investment, where that got tricky is there was greenwashing. There was, you know, they felt like we didn't deliver on some of the promises right. that we had said. So I think it's not that all of that was bad. I think there is a new wave of impact that's coming. And one thing we've started using even is like impact adjusted or impact adjusted returns versus, I think where we went wrong is with old guard, next gens tried to say impact investing meant you had to sacrifice profitability. And that's just not the case.
I would agree. There's a lot of things that can be extremely impactful that have extreme value. Because a lot of it is dealing with people as opposed to product, maybe say, if that even kind of makes sense. I think when a lot of times when people think about investing, a lot of times they're thinking of straight product and not necessarily the people. And you've mentioned it numerous times so far on the show about, you know, how you take care of people and how that's a crucial part. When you zoom out, what kind of impact do you want your work to have on the next generation?
Oh,
it's a massive question.
These are great questions. What kind of impact do I want to have on the next generation? Well, I'll give one active campaign we're doing right now, which is personal. It's a personal one. So we're doing a campaign called Women in Decision. Hmm. And we decided to launch that campaign largely because of the work that Bia was doing with Gloria Steinem. And I was in Gloria Steinem's living room, which, you know, as a researcher, seeing the mother of feminism was a pretty big deal. And there's only 10 of us, right?
I have to tell you this. When I mentioned that to my wife, she gave me a side-eye look like, you don't know who Gloria is? And I'm like, well, I probably know what she did. And she goes, you need to go do research on yourself. I'm not even answering this question. So yeah. I had to leave that there. It's coming from the guy's perspective, you know, hey.
She's an icon, right? And I think that, anyway, to answer your question, what do I hope to see for this next generation? And I'll say for girls specific, well, all generations. But we launched that campaign to show the actual women that are making decisions and remind girls of what's possible.
Yeah.
So there was a social media campaign that came out a little bit ago that I think it was called the Dream Gap, right? And they proved out at certain ages where girls stop thinking they could go into science or stop thinking that they can be president or stop thinking that they don't even know what venture is, right? And so to combat that, although it could be applied to anything you care about, but to combat that, we launched this where we're actively showing women in, you know, from women that work in space departments to women that are running venture funds to show girls what's possible. So not just girls, but the entire generation. My hope is that when Chris and I are done with this, they have the tools, the resources, the experts, and the community that they can accomplish anything that they dream of.
That's awesome. That's a great way to end the show. Where can somebody find out about you or to connect with you if they wanted to do so?
Yeah. So my personal brand is Chelsea On Her Way. That's on Instagram. LogicTree is just at logictry.com. And then you'll see us promote different campaigns and different content on logictree.com as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Chelsea. Thank you so much. It's been amazing. And I know it's been enlightening for a lot of people. Today's conversation with Chelsea Toler highlights something bigger than wealth. It's about alignment, decision-making, and building the right relationships in the right rooms. From advisory influence to capital allocation to building companies, success today is less about access and more about clarity, trust, and intentional action. Chelsea's perspective is a reminder that the future belongs to those who can think clearly, connect strategically, and lead with purpose. Chelsea, thank you for being here and sharing your insight. I'm Brian Fetzer. Stay focused, stay ready, and keep changing the game.